Okay, so in the last class, we discussed the quantization of the RNS string in Lightcon gauge. And Lightcon gauge. And in particular, I describe the spectrum of the open string. We saw that we have to glue all the sectors together. So there was the NS, so we did the open string. So there was the NS sector, and the Ramon sector. So with this different signs in the chest of boundary conditions. And there was a certain value for the mass for the states we derived. And we saw that there's a ground state that is in the Neve-Schwarz sector that is a space-time boson. There was nothing at the same mass level in the Ramon sector. So this was mass level minus 1/2. So it was a tachyon. There was a bosonic state. There was no corresponding spinner, no fermionic state. And then at the massless level, we saw that the states were in the Neve-Schwarz sector. We had a state that that under the SO8 Lorentz group or transverse Lorentz group behaves like a vector. So a state that was 8V. So let's label the components something like this as I. So where I is an index that transforms as a vector under SO8. And in the Ramon sector, there was another state that was a spinner of SO8, also with 8 components. So let's call this, for example, 8. Now, so we had the same, at the massless level, we had the same number of bosonic and fermionic degrees of freedom. So that is actually part of a supersymmetry multiplet. But we saw that there are that the ground state in the Neve-Schwarz sector, there was no fermionic partner, so there were two problems with the state. First of all, the obvious one, the negative mass square. Second of all, so there is no space-time supersymmetry in this for this multiplet. And then we saw that if we impose the GSO projection, what we are going to do is to project this out. So this gets projected out by the GSO projection. And the way I presented it, the GSO projection was like a rule where we say, well, we define a G parity that I'm not going to write up again. And we said that well, and this G parity can be plus or minus 1. And we said that we only want to keep states in which the G parity is plus 1 in the Neve-Schwarz sector. Now, in the Ramon sector, the G parity had a factor of gamma 11, something like gamma 5 in 4 dimensions, but now in for 10 dimensions. And so depending on the chirality of the ground state, we can say we either keep the states with GRs equal to plus 1 or minus 1. So the theories are related in an easy way simply by flipping the chirality of the spinner, so it doesn't really change anything, maybe by some parity transformation. So either one we have to keep, either plus 1 or minus 1 to construct the theory. OK, now, so the next thing I want to do is, so this was the open string. So the next thing I want to do is to construct the similar spectrum now for the closed string. Now remember that the fields can be, if we talk about the closed string, the fermionic fields can be periodic or antiperiodic. We also were allowed to have two signs in the boundary conditions. And then we have to glue the left movers and the right movers together. So instead of just having two sectors, then we have four different choices. So there is NS, there is Ramon-Ramon sector, and there is RNS and NSR. Now, if we couple stuff with integer spin, we again get integer spin, so that are going to be bosons. In the same way, if we couple if we consider the tensor product of, let's say, for example, 2 spin 1/2, then we get integer spin. So both of these are going to be space time bosons. While these over here are going to be the fermions. So then again, we have to impose the GSO projection also in this case. But now we have different choices. So there are, so let me write this in the form of a table. So we have the left movers. We have the right movers. So again, we define GNS in the same way as I discussed yesterday. And I'm going to write in this table now the different choices for the G parity. So for the left movers, we are always going to choose the parity plus one, right? Because we want the tachyon always to be projected out. So this one over here is always going to be plus. Now, for the for the Ramon sector, then depending on the chirality of the ground state for the left movers and the right movers, we can have two different choices. So either we pick them to be equal, or different, or we pick them to be equal. So in this case, the chirality of the ground state would be opposite, and in this case it would be the same. Now, so this chiral theory is called the type 2B theory, and this non-chiral theory is the type 2A theory. All right, so what we have to do to construct the states explicitly is to consider the tensor product of left movers and right movers. So we simply multiply the states. So let's say we consider this case type 2B. Again, since we are picking the GSO, the G parity, so the states must have a plus parity in the NS sector, the tachyon is projected out, and the ground state becomes this vector. So there are two states that we can consider. So let's actually construct the space-time bosons. So there is this the product of the two vectors. So there are, let's say, the left movers and the right movers. Right? We have seen this the product of two vectors already. Right? So if we call this, for example, omega ij. Then, so a vector transforms in an irreducible way under SO8, right? And this vector transforms in the irreducible way. But if we take the tensor product of these two, we get an object with two indices. But this does not transform in an irreducible way. We have to decompose it into irreducible representations. And the way of doing this is using Young tableaus, where we say, so the fundamental times the fundamental is the scalar plus the symmetric and traceless and the antisymmetric one. So this is the shorthand notation, or it's actually a bit, so you don't need to use Young tableaus to do this, so you can simply say, but the formula is just longer. You write this as something that is invariant under SO8, something that is symmetric traceless, and something that is anti-symmetric, as we discussed already. Yeah, well, so yeah, you would have the box for each index over here. So it's probably too long to discuss it over here, right? So you would have for the fundamental representation, you have one box like this for the index I, and here you take the tensor product and you have the index j. And then if you take, so there are certain rules how to take the tensor product of this, and that's somehow, let's say, a shorthand notation if you want to compute this tensor product here and decompose it into irreducible representations. But it's, so it's nothing, so one can use it, doesn't have to. If one knows how to couple, for example, angular momentum, it's the same story. If we say, for example, we have seen this already, if we couple angular momentum in quantum mechanics, we talk about SU2, right? So we would, for example, so the irreducible representations are labeled by, so let's say SU2, the irreducible representations are labeled by J, right? And if we then take the tensor product of one half times one half, right? So then we know from quantum mechanics that that's going to be the one and the zero, right? The one and the zero, and in the same way we can compute the product of representations of SO8. Now the Young tableaus are actually more tailor-made for representations of SUN instead of the orthogonal group, but they can also be applied. All right, now. So these over here give us the n equal to 1 supergravity multiplet, or the bosonic fields, the scalar with the graviton, we have the antisymmetric tensor. Now, then we get more bosons from taking the tensor from the Ramon-Ramon sector, right? Because it's like coupling spin 1/2 and spin 1/2, and we also get integer spin. So in that case, here's what we do. So let's say we are doing the type 2B case where the left moors and the right moors, so they both have the same chirality. So let me actually denote the index that labels the entries of the spinors. I'm going to label it with A, and I'm going to introduce a different notation for spinors of another chirality in a moment. So we want to consider the tensor product of states like this. So again, the idea is, so we have 8 states like this, and we have 8 states like this, and they're labeled by this integer, so A can take values from 1 to 8. So, and then taking the tensor product is simply saying, so we multiply each of these by each of these. So in total, we have 64 states. So there are 64 states. And and then what we have to do again, so we want to understand how this behaves under SOA transformations under the Lorentz group, and then we have to decompose this into irreducible representations. Well, it turns out that this product of 8 times 8, so the way to decompose it is the following. So we write, so what we are doing is reshuffling the state, so putting them, reshuffling in such a way that if I do an SO8 transformation, so some part of the states just transform among themselves, right? And another set just transforms among themselves. So this is what it means to take the tensor product and then decompose into irreducible representations. And the way to do that, so is to write this 8 times 8 as a 28 plus 35 plus 1, where the 28 corresponds to a 4-form in spacetime that is called C4, This one corresponds to C2, and this one corresponds to C0, so would be invariant. For example, the way to get this one is very easy. So this is the same type of index, so it's easy to show that this object over here, so if we simply multiply with delta AB, so this would not transform under the Lorentz group, and then we would get 1. But then we also have to arrange, to rearrange the rest of the states. And the way to do that is actually, and the result actually of the computation is this one. So we have a 2-form in space sum and a 4-form. There is sort of an, so let me give you a quick summary on how to do this. So the way to compute or to rearrange this this spinors is the following. So we write the Dirac algebra. Somehow like this. And now we are only considering the, so I and j take 8 values, so 1 to 8, so only in the transverse space. So let's say, and I'm going to introduce here a notation that I will use in a moment again. So I want to label a spinner with 1 chirality. I want to label it with A. And if the spinner has the opposite chirality, I want also to use an index like this, but I'm going to put a dot in the index. So this are, so a spinner of 1 chirality. And this one would be opposite chirality. And then it turns out that if I take, for example, the product of one of the scalar matrices, so they are labeled by an index I, and they have matrix, so the entries of this matrix, they carry indices A and B dot, because if I contract this, for example, if I multiply the gamma matrix by 1 spinner, let's say with a dot index, then we are going to get a spinner of the opposite chirality, so the indices are always like this A and B dot. Now, then one defines the following anti-symmetrized product like this, gamma I1 to IN, as 1 divided by N factorial, gamma I1, gamma IN, plus minus permutations. So I add over all possible permutations of these indices, but I take a plus sign depending if it's an even or an odd permutation. So for example, I would define gamma IJ like this. Gamma I, gamma j. So this is an odd permutation. So I would write it with a minus sign and so on. So there is gamma with 3 indices, 4, and so on. Now, it turns out that these objects over here, so there is the identity matrix that I already used over here. That is delta AB. Then there is the object gamma I that is going to carry indices A and B dot. Now, the object with 2 indices like this, so if I have 2 indices over here, right, so that is going to preserve the chirality of the spinner, so it has indices AB. If I have, again, an odd number of these, I have 3 gamma matrices, so the chirality is changed. That has a dotted index. And then the additional, I need the one with 4 indices that is going to have, again, 2 indices A and B. And then the way to arrange the states is to simply, so we start with the 64 states and we reshuffle them like this. So we contract them with delta AB. We, so since they have the same index, so I want to have the even things. So gamma AB times AB like this. And gamma I j k l a b. Now, note that these objects now have a space-time index like this. So this transforms in a certain way under SO8. And let's, for example, count the number of states that we have. Let's do the counting for this one. So I and j. So the definition of this object was like this, gamma I, gamma j, was like this. So this means it's anti-symmetric under I and j permutations. So this means this means, no, I must be careful with the computation here. The number of states is going to be, so I can take 8 values. J can take, so 35. I think I got it the other way around, just one second. So I can take 8 values. J can take 7 values, and then we have to divide by 2. So that one, oh, sorry. This one would be the 28. Just one second. Right, so I think I got it here in the picture the other way around. So this one would be the one. This one, actually, this is a good exercise to double check this in the tutorials. So this one would be the, according to this, this one would be the 28, and this one would be the 35. But again, check to make sure that we did this correctly. Questions? Yeah, so that's what I got confused. So in my notes I have it this way, but now I did the computation and I got it the other way around. So for a moment I got confused. But it's easy to check. So so if it's anti-symmetric in the two indices, it should be 8, right? And it has two indices. 8, so one of the indices can take 8 values. The second one then can take 7 values because it's anti-symmetric. And because of the symmetry, we divide by 2, so we have 28 states. So I think I should simply trust the computation I just did and change the labeling here. OK. All right. Now we want to do the same thing for the, we want to do the same thing for the type 2A theory. So, OK. Or maybe I just write the result for the type 2B theory. So this means that the bosonic fields, I'm not going to derive the fermionic fields. Yes?
Because we've already done some sort of like conversation.
Yes. So I mean, so there's some kind of nice picture to see this. Let's say, so the string is something like, so let's say we are in 3 dimensions so that I can paint a picture, right? So instead of 10 or 26, we are in 3 dimensions. And then we are using only transverse modes. Now, so just imagine, for example, that the string, so it's a two-dimensional what? So it's a two-dimensional surface in 3 dimensions. And the independent oscillations should be oscillations maybe in this direction, so it wiggles in some way. But if it wiggles in this direction, it shouldn't really give something new, so it stays a plane, if you want. So then, so this is sort of a fast way to see that we want to, I mean, we did all these formulas, right, to show that we can do the Lacan gate. But the nice picture is simply like this. We want the wiggling in this direction to be independent modes, but if it's along the brain, it really doesn't change. It's just like maybe a coordinate transformation of the string, and that shouldn't lead to a new mode. So, and this is for boson and fermions. Okay, now, so for type 2B, then we have the following bosonic fields. I'm not going to derive the fermionic field. So we have the scalar phi, we have the metric, and we have the two form. But now we have new stuff. So these are the Raman-Raman fields, C0, C2, and C4. So note that if we talk about type 2B theory, these are like potentials. Like, for example, if you talk about a gauge field, then it's a tensor field with one index, right? So A, M, something like this. So that would be something that in this notation would be an object that is C1, right? And so this is the way to construct Young-Mill theory, so starting with objects like this. Now, these objects here are fixed like this. So C2 would have indices M and N, right? C4 would have indices M, N, P, and Q. So it's like, these are tensor fields, right? and while this have some importance that should be able to explain in the next two lectures, because this means that the theory besides strings are also vibrate. So these are the objects that couple to the two extended objects. Okay, now, so the potentials for the, so and these are potentials, they are not field strengths. So the field strength would be odd for these, while the potentials are even forms. Okay, so this is the field content for type B. Now for type 2A. So we do again the same thing. So we have the vector, in the Navier-Schwarz sector. And as an S sector, we again consider the product of the vector, and we get our Dilaton plus metric plus anti-symmetric tensor again, so phi G B. But now in the Ramon sector, we have to consider the tensor product of things like this. So there's going to be a spinner with one chirality, and the spinner with the other chirality. So to distinguish them, I'm going to put on a dot in this index. And then again, we have 64 states, right? So they're different chirality, but the counting is the same. So we have 8 states here, and we have 8 states here. So we take the product, and total we have 64 states. And now we have to reshuffle them. Now this time, the way to reshuffle them is the following. So we are going to take of this product here of gamma matrices, we are going to take the odd ones. So the one, this one, and this one. So now, how does this transform under the Lorentz group, the SO8 Lorentz group? Has one loose index.
Next,
the vector. So what? It's a vector. So this over here is a vector, right? So let's call it 8b, so it only has one index over there. And this one over here would be a free form. Let's call, well, so this one we call C1, and this one we call C3. And now we have to do the computation to make sure that we are not missing any states, because, well, maybe reshuffling them like this gives us some states, but not all of them. But it turns out that we have 64, and because the computation a moment ago didn't really work, so it's going to do this one again. So this one is 8 times 8. So in this case, so how many components do I have here from C1? This one I get 8. Now, how many do I get for C3? Somebody use the presentation? We can use paper if you want. I will wait for 10 seconds. Yes. Right, 56, because then we are going to have here. So we want something like this three indices, but should be anti-symmetric in all of them, right? So this means that, let's say, the first index can take 8 values, the second one can take 7 values, and the next one can take 6 values, because they cannot be equal, right? And, but then I have this, it's anti-symmetric, so I have to divide by 3 factorial. That should be the 56. And yes, 64 is 6. So that's 64, and 8 plus 56. So we have all the states. This means for type 2A, the bosonic fields that we are going to get are in the Navier-Schwarz sector. We again get the Dilaton, the graviton, and the asymmetric tensor. And in the Ramon sector, we get one term and three terms. Okay. So the Ramon-Ramon potentials in this case are odd forms in type A. And for type B, these are even forms. All right, now, and again, so we'll be returning to these when discussing D-brains, because these are the objects that are telling us that there are actually not only strings in the theory, but also some extended objects that are D-brains. Questions? All right, now, so since we have done all this work to quantize strings in the RNS formalism, what I want to do next is, and I think I should be able to do it in the rest of the class, is to discuss the theoretic string, because we are going to use basically the same rules, and I'm going to be a bit more sketchy. So it's going to be exactly the same game. We are just going to change a little bit the players in the game. So we are going to change a little bit the fields, and then we are going to see how we change the spectrum at the end of the day.
It seems that there are different ways to construct consistent string theories. Is that...
Who was asking? Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, there are different ways of constructing consistent string theories. So we have seen until now, so what is actually called type 1, if we have the open strings. We have seen type 2a, type 2b, right? We have seen bosonic strings. Now, bosonic strings, we can sort of already... see that, well, they have, we cannot rule them out, because if we say they have a tachyon, what we're learning is that we're expanding about their own vacuum. So maybe we have to find the vacuum that is the real one. So we cannot really rule them out. But yes, from the perturbative point of view, there seem to be many different choices for string theories, but they are related, and this is what is called string duality. So this has been an area of lots of activity, let's say, since 95. So many people have looked at this, how these different string theories are actually related. So really describe, let's say, to do phenomenology, many people, let's say, back in the 80s were very much interested in the next string theory. I'm going to describe the theoretic string, because if we look at this field content, it's nice, but it's not ideal. So first, I mean, this has gravity over here, but what are we going to do with all these tensor fields? I mean, if we want to describe a model of particle physics, for example, so that's not something that we really need. And something that we really want, that would be gauge fields and non-abelian ones, something that is not here. So then, so this is where the next perturbative string theory comes in. So from the perturbative point of view, they look all very different, but it turns out that non-perturbatively they are related. It's like saying we are looking at one and the same function, and we are expanding it about different points, and then the theory somehow looks different. But it's actually there are many dualities that relate string theories. Okay, now. Or maybe a different analogy that has been used is to compare the different string theories, perturbative ones, like with phases of water, for example, can look like ice, like gas, or like liquid. And the theory looks different, but it's the same stuff, so that is also an analogy that is that is used a lot to explain or to compare it with a situation where there are string fields that look different, but they are supposed to be just a different aspect of one and the same thing. All right, now, so heterotic strings. So we have seen different types of closed string fields. So we have seen closed Poisson strings. Right, where we say we have an action like this, and we choose closed boundary conditions, and you should have seen in detail how the quantization works in this case. Now we have discussed the closed strings in RNS formalism and our RNS formalism, where we say, well, we have those bosons. Let me actually, we have the bosons, and then we are going to add a bunch of free fermions in two dimensions. Now, all of these have one common property that we are going to take advantage of. Namely, let's say we stick to the bosonic string for the moment. We could write this in terms of right movers and left movers, like this. And the right movers and the left movers were somehow decoupled. We always ended up doing some kind of tensor product, right? So if we want to compute the spectrum, for example, then we take the left movers and we take the tensor product with the right movers. So left movers and right movers were somehow decoupled. So left movers and right movers. So for strings, for example, in the RNS formalism, we can say we choose the right movers to be in the Raman sector, the left movers in the Neverschwarz sector, or we choose the NSNS sector. So there were different choices that were actually independent. Now we are going to take advantage of the independence, and we are going to change the theory in a more dramatic way. So take advantage of this, let's say, independence. And the way to do that is the following. So let's say we start again with our favorite action, strings in RNS formalism, in conformal gauge. Like this. And we impose closed string boundary conditions. And now what we are going to do is to simply dump the left moving fermions. So what we are going to do is to simply set these psi plus is equal to zero. So then we end up with a theory that only has this fits over here. Now, so what do we have then for the left movers? The left movers, then let's look at left movers, left and right. So the bosonic fields, there's going to be still some left moving part, right? So we are talking about closed strings, so we still decompose like this. So there's going to be some left movers. Half the sigma. And there's going to be some right movers. Now for the right movers we have the bosons, but we also have the fermions. Now, from the left-moving perspective, this actually looks like a 26-dimensional theory. So the critical dimension is going to be 26. Right? Now, for the right-movers, on the other hand, well, there the critical dimension is going to be 10. But this is really silly. We cannot say we have one part of the theory living in 10 dimensions and the other one living in 26. Now, the way to remedy this is to write 26 as 10 plus 16. So So the way to remedy this is to write 26 as 10 to 16. And then we are going to say that, well, if we were in the bosonic string, this index mu, right, would take 26 values, right? Now we are going to say that it only takes 10 values, but then we still need fields that make up this value of 16 over here. So one way to do that, for example, is to say, well, we could add additional scalar fields, right? And then we could say, well, we can add additional scalar fields, and how about taking 16 of them? So they would carry an index, but this wouldn't be some kind of space-time index, could be some label. As long as we have 16 fields, we would be okay. Now, taking scalar fields, 16 additional scalar fields, doesn't really work. Somebody sees why? Right? So just try something like this. P plus pi I minus pi r. And then we say, well, I is some kind of label that takes 16 values. Put to that.
Could you then decompose phi into left and right and wing parts? And
exactly. Exactly. So then that way I would fix the left movers, but I would get more stuff for the right movers. So then the way to do that, so that doesn't really work. So that's something that we don't want. So and then the way to resolve this is to actually introduce instead of bosonic fields, fermionic fields that are going to carry an index A and that are going to depend on tau plus sigma.
Why can't you just add a scalar field that only depends on tau plus sigma?
You could, but it would be a chiral scalar, and writing an action for chiral scalars is not completely. So that's a bosonized version of the story. One can do it, but that's much more tricky. You can easily write down an action for a boson that has left movers and right movers. But writing an action for a chiral scalar is more difficult because where would the constraint come from? So you would have to impose it by hand, or you would have to use Lagrange multipliers, or that's a whole different story. So that's an entirely different ballgame. And this is, let's say, the next obvious thing one can try. Now, then we still have to come up with it. So we did write 36 as 10 plus 16. And then we still have to explain the 16 over here. Now, the way to explain this is to note that, well, what we actually read as dimension of space-time is actually just a label that counts number of fields. And actually, for consistency, the only thing we care about is the central charge. So it turns out that for one boson, the central charge would be equal to 1. And so instead of counting dimensions, I can count central charge, and the contribution of each lambda A is going to be 1/2. So this means that in order to come up with a contribution to the dimension that is 16, I need how many of these?
32.
Exactly. So then we need A to B from 1 to 32. And this then gives a contribution to the dimension that seems equal to 16. Okay, so here we have our new toy. We are going to take this action. We are going to erase this stuff. And we are going to add an action for the lambdas. Now, so there's no problem with writing an action for a fermionic field, that's chiral. For a bosonic field is a whole different story. Okay, and now we want to play the entire game again, now just with different fields. We don't have to do the analysis of the boundary conditions again, so those ones we have chosen, we have closed strings. Now, one thing that is important is that there is an SO32 symmetry acting on this index A. something. Now, so let me give just 1 minute, 1 minute review of what it means that there are samples of 32 symmetry, and let me give you a little example. So let's say we are in two dimensions like this, x is y, and we have a vector phi, we have a vector for example v, and we have a vector that is rotated, v prime, then we know that correlate v prime, let's say by angle phi, right? So then v prime is going to be related by some matrix. So let's call this matrix V. So V prime is equal to M times V. Now, in order for this to be a rotation, this matrix M satisfies certain conditions, namely that M times M transpose is equal to 1, and the determinant is equal to 1. So to describe rotations in two dimensions, M has to be an SO2 matrix. Now, a different way of stating this is to say, well, we are considering a rotation where, so the scalar product is not going to be changed, right? So if we do that, this SO2, the rotation of the vectors, the scalar product is not going to be changed. Now, we want to do something similar to this index A over here, right? And it turns out that instead of, so here we are, let's say A would take the values 1 and 2. Over there, it's like a rotation in 32 dimensions. So then we are going to say, well, lambda A. So it's basically completely the same story. We are describing a rotation, but now instead of in 2 dimensions, in 32. And then instead of talking about M being in SO2, we are talking about M being in SO32. Yes?
I mean, over here, we're rotating a vector, not a spinner. Is that...
This is a vector index, right? So this over here is not, this is not a spinor index.
Okay.
So this is a label, right? So it's like saying, so here we have a vector that would be like x, y, and this index labels this and this. So it transforms like a vector. Okay? It's not a spinor index because it's already written as lambda plus. So the lambda minus component would be equal to 0. So MAB, so the A and B index is like a, it's like a vector index. Like this, right? And then, well, so from all the stuff that we have in the formula, right, this row, this derivative, this bar, we don't really care about. So all we care about is how this index lambda transforms. And what it does is simply this. So under lambda transforming like this in the fundamental representation of SO32, this would transform in this way, MAB, and the lambda back there with MAC. Right, and this over here, so it comes like AB and AC, so that's delta AB since M transpose is equal to 1. So in that way, we have an SO32 symmetry. Okay, now, so this will be important when constructing the spectrum. Because now, in some sense, we detrade too much supersymmetry that we obtain if we have closed strings in the RNS formalism. We detrade some supersymmetry by some gauge symmetry. Because now we have, let's write again one table like this, left movers and right movers. And so for the left movers, we have an SO32 symmetry under which lambda A transforms in the fundamental representation. So fundamental representation for SO32 simply means it transforms like a vector, right? So you do a rotation and it transforms like a vector. So that is what fundamental representation means in this context. So for the right movers, we have supersymmetry. So we still have a symmetry of the action, but now we dump everything that has psi plus. Okay. And now we do the, we don't really care about the interpretation of this, of these indices, if we call them mu and they are space, so the label some dimension. Over here, they are going to label again this fields lambda. Now, when constructing the spectrum, it's always the same kind of rules, right? So we are going to impose certain boundary conditions so that the boundary term vanishes, and so on. So it's basically the same story as what we discussed yesterday. Now, again, I'm going to, there are mass formulas that I'm just going to quote. Some part of the formula, the part with the oscillators, we can see where they come from. The normal ordering constants, I'm just going to write up. I don't want to go through the entire computation. So let's construct the spectrum. Sorry, I would like to leave the, maybe I erase this stuff. Okay, so let's put on this blackboard the right movers. So here it's basically the same analysis we did yesterday as for open strings, for example. So it's basically the same story, so I will be really brief. So there are again, periodic and antiperiodic boundary conditions. So let's say an S sector, which would be antiperiodic. Boundary conditions. So there is a mass formula like this. So it's completely the same thing as yesterday. So there's the contribution from the alpha oscillators, from the fermions. And there's a normal ordering constant, again, that I'm just going to quote. I'm not going to derive. And there is the Raman sector. It's probably too low, right? Okay, well, I'm going to write it anyway, even if you cannot see it, because it's the same formula as yesterday. N, D minus N. So again, we impose GSO projections. So the ground state in the Navier-Schwarz sector is tachyon, but we project it out. And so then the ground state is going to be massless, and so the ground state for the right movers as m square is equal to 0. So there is the NS sector, and there is the Raman sector. So in the NS sector, the ground state is the vector, like this. And in the Raman sector, it's the spinner, again, also with 8 components. So these are the right movers. Now we have to work a little bit more for the left movers, but not much. And then we will take the tensor product of this stuff times the stuff we find for the left movers. Okay, the left movers. Now, so the kinetic term for the lambdas looks the same. It's a two-dimensional spinner. So we need the I'm sure there's a question over there. OK, so what we are doing is we have changed. OK, then you should have interrupted me earlier. So we are constructing now a string code that's called the deretic string, right? And we have changed the fields according to certain rules, right? So we have changed the fields. And now what I'm doing is to quantize the theory and constructing the spectrum. So it's conceptually, it's very similar to what we have discussed so far, to what we have discussed for the bosonic string, or we should have discussed for the bosonic string, to what we have discussed for the RNS string, just the spectrum, the massless fields, right? So the low energy spectrum, so with the graviton and so on. Now we are changing the rules of the game, so we are taking different fields, and I've motivated why we are taking these fields, and we are going to construct the spectrum again. Now, the result of this computation should be that we have this SO32 symmetry, and now we are going to get gauge field at the end of the day with of the SO32 non-abelian gauge fields that have this SO32 symmetry. So this is something that so we are going to construct the spectrum of this. So why we want a gauge symmetry that is as large as SO32? Well, that's a different story. Or phenomenology or whatever.
So we're doing all of this because we'd like to have a left mover with an SO32 symmetry because that'll be good for the standard model. Because we have our left mover fermions and then we remove them and then we add a new left moving fermion with a different symmetry.
Exactly. So in that way we get rid, so we are doing closed string theory, right? Now. Then we get from the theories turn out to have an n equal to 2 supersymmetry in space. So it's a very large symmetry. By eliminating those left-moving fermions of the RNS string, we get rid of some of that supersymmetry, so the deretic strings are only going to have n equal to 1 supersymmetry, which is useful for phenomenology, and we trade that, so to say, for gauge symmetry, but we also want for phenomenology. Now, it's still not ideal because the gauge symmetry we are going to get is SO32, but there is one that people like a lot, that is EA times EA to the deretic string that can be constructed in a similar way. I'm not going to discuss this one. I'm going to discuss the SO32 string. OK? All right. So then there are the left movers. And we again have different choices for boundary conditions, periodic and antiperiodic. The construction of the mode expansion and the canonical quantization works in the same way as for the other fermions, the fields psi. So if we have A boundary conditions, we again have a mode expansion. So if we have a minus sign, we need half integer indices. And again, we impose canonical quantization, and then these satisfy some anti-commutation relations. And again, some of these are creation operators, other ones are annihilation operators, and so on. Now, there is a mass formula also in this case. So so there are the left movers, another field number. And the normal ordering constant in this case is minus 1. And then there are the periodic boundary conditions. In which now the fields are expanded. Now this index isn't instead of half integer, it's integer. So that we get a plus sign in the boundary conditions. And again, there's canonical quantization for the coefficients. on the AM. Delta AB times delta M plus zero. So exactly the same way as for the other fermions, sorry. And there's also a mass formula that one can derive, so that's the normal ordering constant. Normal ordering constant. All right. So and then we construct the spectrum, right? So then what we have to do now, so it's a bit funny to call all of these masses. Now, if we construct the states by gluing the right movers and the left movers together, so we want to have the same result for mass square. So that's sort of the level matching condition that you know from the bosonic string or four strings in RNS formalism. Now, let's say we want to construct the massless fields or the massless states. Then we already see this is plus one, so that's and this the eigenvalues of these operators are positive. So there is no massless states coming from with periodic boundary conditions. So let's construct the spectrum. Today I may need just a little bit longer. Is that okay? Maybe 10 minutes. Is this something that works, or?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Maybe a bit earlier, I will say. Yes.
Yeah, how do you have integer values? The sticking the integer values, right?
Mm-hmm. So in order to have this, okay, boundary condition for delta series. Right. So if we shift sigma by pi, so then we want. So we want a minus sign in this one, so this is why we apply the integer values. And over there we want a plus sign, and this is why it's integer. To satisfy the boundary condition of the series. Okay, so let's put all the story together just to compute the massless spectrum. Bosonic fields. So I'm just going to talk about bosonic fields. So there are left movers and there are right movers. So let's do the easy part first. The right movers we know. So that's the massless states are the vector and the spinner, right? Now, again, we are imposing GSO projection, and everything that has negative mass square, we are going to dump. And let me claim that that is the thing we have to do in order to get a consistent theory, in order to get a modular invariant on the partition function. Now, this means that from the left movers, the only states that are in the spectrum are alpha minus 1. So that's going to be vector, so let me call this AB. And the other state is going to be like this. So we need two of these lambdas because one raises the value of this, the eigenvalue of the operator only by one half, so we need two of them. So let me maybe call this omega AB. Okay. So we did all this work of presenting a new two-dimensional theory with now different fields, and now what we want to do is to compute the massless spectrum. So let me actually this one is AB, right? So that's the difference based on this one is AP, and let's say this one is a spinor. We simply call it A. Now I want to compute the spectrum by tensoring this times this, right? So I want to take the states from here, and I want to take the tensor product with the states over there. Now, how do I get bosons? What can I do? So let's say I have J, and I want to take the tensor product with sub on the right-hand side. How do I get bosons? Come on, please. Right. So if I, and we have done this product already, so this is, again, the old story. So we take the product of the vector and the vector to get the and the symmetric tensor. Now, there's one additional way of getting bosonic fields. So in total, there are four possibilities, right? Because we have, let's say, two states here, right? And two over here. So we have four possibilities. Now, two of them give rise to bosons, and two give rise to fermions. Well, that's going to, so this over here, that's a good question. A is a vector index under SO32, so it's not some kind of space-time. So it doesn't transform at all under the space-time, under the SO8 in space-time, the Lorentz transformation in the transverse space. So in some sense, it's a singlet, right? So it doesn't transform. So this means in order to construct the bosons, we can either take this, that is a vector times a vector, or multiply this thing that doesn't transform times a vector, right? So in that way, we are going to get a vector in space-time because it carries an I index, but this vector is going to do more stuff because it has this indices A and B. And what this stuff is of course what we want to understand. So this is one way of getting bosons, and this is actually the n equal to 1 supergravity multiplet. So we know that we have that one in for heterotic strings, these are massless fields. Now, the other way to get bosonic massless fields is like this. So we have this left mover, so that's a singlet under the SO8 Lorentz group times a vector, right? So that's, let me actually call this object maybe A, I, and it has two indices A and B. Well, okay, it's a bit unfortunate. Yeah, whatever. So I'm using twice the letter A, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay. So we know that this object, we know how it transforms under the Lorentz transformations under SO8, right? So this is an SO8 vector. But then there are also transformations acting on these indices A and B. Now, Lambda itself, they transform in the fundamental representation of SO32. But now we have this product and moreover. So we have the product of A and B, right? And moreover, we are taking the antisymmetric part, and it turns out that this transforms in the adjoint representation of SO32. Now, so what I wanted, okay. What I wanted to do in this last 10 minutes is to give a very short review of Lie groups and what it means to be in the adjoint representation. Now, so that is actually the requirement in order for this to be a non-abelian gauge field in space-time. The SO32 gauge field. Now, so the question is now, should I give this short review or about adjunct representation versus fundamental representation, or is this something you guys feel comfortable with? You feel comfortable with that? Oh, I should give the review. Okay, good. Okay, so let's do this real quick. So a very fast crash course in Lie algebras. And it's hopefully going to be really fast and painless. So again, we already have seen, hopefully. Now let's say we are in three dimensions. We have these two vectors, v and v prime. So we consider the rotation from v to v prime, right? So these are rotated in a certain way. So then we say v prime is related by a matrix U, right? Using a matrix U to v, right? So where U times U transpose is equal to 1, and the determinant of U is equal to 1. So now we describe rotations in three dimensions, so U has to be an SO3 matrix. Now, so it's enough for us to talk about SON, so that is actually all the only Lie algebra we have to consider. There are other ones, but Lie groups, but that's the only one we have to consider. Now, what we are going to do is to, so over here, maybe we have rotated this vector into the other one in a certain plane and by an angle phi. Now we want to assume that phi is very small, right? So phi is very small. So then what we are going to do is to write this matrix U over here that describes the rotation. We can somehow Taylor expand it as unit matrix plus I alpha A X. I am going to define these objects in a moment. So this over here parameterizes the different rotations. Let's say we go back to this picture over here in three dimensions, and we can do rotations about the one axis, about the two axis, or the three axis, right? And so this matrix will in general depend on three angles. And these objects here are then the generators. So we probably should be able to find out how to describe rotations if you want, maybe with Euler angles or whatever. So we should be able to find this matrix U. And then we would find this generators here by doing a Taylor expansion, so assuming that the angles are very small. Now it turns out that the condition that these objects form a group translate into the condition that these objects form an algebra. So this over here, U form a group. So it's closed under multiplication, if you want. So this translate into the fact that the generators form an algebra. So an algebra there, instead of talking about the product of matrices, we talk about commutators. So this is what in general is called a Lie algebra. And these over here are so X, A, and B, and C. So these are the generators. And these objects here are called structure constants. Right? So it should be a matter of a small computation to, for example, compute the structure constants for maybe for SO3. So by taking that matrix there, doing a Taylor expansion, then we can compute this structure constant. So it's a small exercise, but I very much believe that you should know how to do this. Now, then we simply look at this Lie algebra and we say, well, and we imagine that we know these numbers over here, FABC, for Lie algebra SON, so rotations in n dimensions. So let's be a little bit more abstract. And instead of talking about rotations in three dimensions, we do rotations in n dimensions. So then we can also compute these numbers. And then we say, well, from this picture, we were able to find the generators X, right, by simply taking vectors. So let's stick to SO3. So we rotate these vectors, we compute our matrix. It's a 3x3 matrix, right? So if we are at 3 dimensions. So use a 3x3 matrix. If I do this expansion over here, this infinitesimal expansion, XA is also going to be a 3x3 matrix. So in this way, I would obtain a 3-dimensional representation of SO3, right? Which means that I have some matrices that are 3x3 matrices that satisfy this rule over here with some given structure constants. But now I look at this and I say, is it really true that I have to use 3-dimensional matrices to satisfy this? Or can I say I have the same structure constants here and I represent this by bigger objects? For example, a matrix that is not 3x3 but bigger. And it turns out to be that this is possible. And so, and in general, of course, so what's the dimension of the fundamental representation of SON? So if we don't talk about SO3, so we would talk about SON. So what kind of matrices would we have? What times what matrices? N by N, right? So if we talk about SON, then we would talk about N times N dimensional or matrices, right? So this would be an N dimensional representation. Right. Now it turns out to be the case, and this happens to be the case for any Lie algebra, not only for SON, that there's another representation that for any Lie algebra that is not the fundamental but the adjoint representation. This works like this: adjoint representation. In that case, we would say that the generators, so they are going to be labeled by an index A, right? So that counts the number of generators. For example, for the rotation group, the number of independent rotations I can do, right? In 3 dimensions would be the rotations about different axes, right? So, and this is going to be a matrix, and the indices are going to be labeled by B and C. And if I set that equal to the structure constants, one can actually show that this object here is a small computation. Solve this. Now, for SON, this is not the fundamental representation, but the representation is bigger. Now, so this is so this indices. So the question we are asking is: so what values do the indices B and C take, right? So how big are these matrices? This is going to tell us what the dimension of the representation is. So let's do a small counting. So the dimension of this representation, of the adjoint representation, is the same as the number of generators, right? So the dimension is the same. So what value? So that is the number of generators. In plain English, if we talk about rotations and dimensions, the number of independent rotations, right? So if we are in 3 dimensions, let's say we have the axis 1, 2, and 3, right? So we have some weird shape object like this, and we want to count the number of different rotations that we can do. Now, the most practical way to do this, a way that we can easily generalize, is simply to talk about rotations in different planes. So we can talk about rotations in the 1, 2 plane, like this, rotations in the 2, 3 plane, and rotations in 1, 3. So in rotations in different planes. Right? So our rotation in the 1, 2 plane, our rotation in the 1, 3 plane, or our rotation in the 2, 3 plane. Right? In 3 dimensions, we can also talk about rotations about an axis, but it's the same thing, right? So we could say a rotation about the 1 axis, but that doesn't generalize to higher dimensions. All right, now we want to generalize two n dimensions. Now we do rotations in n dimensions. So how many possible different rotations are there? Any guess? Exactly. So the number of rotations are going to be the different plane, the different planes we have, right? So we can have let me simply call it the different axes. How do I call it? I and j. So let's say I and j, this label, the number of dimensions, then we can, so we are, for example, in 32 dimensions, then we can still consider rotations in the 1-2 plane. But now we have to take into account that rotation in the 1-2 plane and 2-1 plane is the same, right? So we have to divide by 2. And of course, we cannot rotate in the 1-1 plane, so that doesn't make sense. So this means that the possible the number of generators is going to be n times n minus 1 divided by 2. Okay. So while the fundamental representation of S or n is n-dimensional, the adjoint representation is going to have this dimension over here. So it's going to be written in terms of bigger matrices, right? OK, now it turns out to be the case that this is exactly the, let's go back now. So that was the quick crash course in Lie algebras. So the state we constructed. So A over here is an S of 32 vector index. But we are taking this product. Now again, let's count so we are taking the tensor product. And in general, we would have to decompose, again, this tensor product into irreducible representations. But in this case, this is actually already irreducible, namely, this can take 32 values. The index, let's say 8, can take 32 values. Now, these are fermions, so they cannot be equal. So the next index can take 31 values, and it's antisymmetric, so divided by 2. So that's exactly the dimension of the adjoint representation of SO32. So that's adjoint representation of SO32. Now, and it turns out to be the case that this is important because the gauge fields, in order to be able to construct non-abelian gauge theories, have to transform in the adjoint representation. So that is required by consistency. So this is actually the representation needed for this object to be SO32 gauge field in spacetime. So just to answer your question again, so why are we doing all this? So the reason we are doing all this is because now we've got a massless spectrum. So the massless spectrum. And let me just quote the bosonic field. So we have bosonic fields in the n equal to 1 supergravity multiplet. And over there, we have the vector multiplet with SO32 gauge group. So this is a good starting point to do phenomenology. Namely, one has gravity in the theory, and one has non-abelian gauge groups. It's SA32 is a nice group. Now, it has certain problems for phenomenology. Now, there's a generalization that I'm not going to explain. So there is a generalization, or there is, I shouldn't say generalization. OK, let me simply say one additional consistent superstring theory in which the SO32 gauge group is actually replaced by E8 times E8. So E8 is the biggest Lie algebra around. And so that is a very large group. And this one turns out to be more interesting for phenomenology. Now, in order to get this, we would have to do the entire exercise again. We are not going to do that. And change a little bit the boundary conditions for the Fields lambda. So that's, again, so this is described in GSW if you want. So I'm not going to describe this. All right, that's what I wanted to say for today. Questions? Sorry? Well, the subgroups is, think about it as rotations in 32 dimensions, right? Now, so what are the subgroups of rotations? Well, you can do rotations in less dimensions, right? So, right? So it's right, okay.
Well, I mean, how long can the study be in 32?
Sorry?
How long do we have separate studies in 32? That's good. Can I assume it here?
I didn't understand your question. Can I speak louder?
Which of its subgroups can we split nicely in unitary groups?
Well, okay, so you can always say, so you actually you can, so this is our rotation in 32 dimensions, and then you can say what are the subgroups. You can consider rotations in subspaces, for example. Right? So it's you can, for example, say, well, SON times SO32 minus N. So that is, for example, something that you can do. Now, the problem with this gauge group is if you would like, for example, to get complex representation, so you're not going to do that with SO32. And then if one uses E8 times E8, then one gets complex representation. And that's what one needs for phenomenology. All right, well, then see you guys tomorrow.